Well, on this beautiful day that we have, good day to talk about eyesight, clear vision, things like that. Jesus, in Matthew chapter 6, used that as a illustration to make a spiritual application of teaching for our lives, using the example of having a good eye, having a bad eye. And we're all concerned about our eyesight, going to our doctors regularly, having checkups, getting new prescriptions filled, so that we can see clearly. Sharp vision is important to us. We don't want to be driving down the road and have double vision and see two stop signs or two people crossing the road or two cars coming at us. We can see how serious of a problem that would be. And yet Jesus here in the Sermon on the Mount address a common problem that can easily beset us all, and one that we often need to be challenged and reminded of, because Jesus, unlike many of the preachers in our day, did not stop to address the difficult issues where it needed to be taught. Because not only are we to be committed faithfully to God in our religious devotion, but also in the ambition of our personal lives. And it's that Jesus takes up in this section of the Sermon on the Mount. And to read briefly again these verses in Matthew 6 and verse 19 through 24, he said, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." I think most of us draw the conclusion that Jesus is teaching some type of a parable here in this text. And that there is some type of meaning that he is driving at when he's talking about the eye. Because he begins here by talking about our treasure. And in verses 19 through 21, he draws a clear contrast between having treasures on earth or treasures in heaven. And his point is that we must choose between the two. We can't deceive ourselves into thinking, I can have both. I can have treasures on earth, I can have treasures in heaven. When Jesus uses the word treasures here, it is the Greek word thesauros, and it's the same word that we use for a thesaurus, which is like a dictionary. I think most of us understand that it actually says a treasury of words. And if you are looking for a similar meaning to a word that you want to use instead of using the same word over and over, you have a thesaurus and you can look up similar meanings of words, synonyms and things of that nature. And that's the word that Jesus used here, that do not lay up treasures on earth. Do not treasure up the things of this earth. Lay your treasures up in heaven. And he explains here that there's good reasons not to lay up treasures here on earth. Number one is that rust and moth consume them. And second, that thieves can break in and steal them. Nothing is very safe these days with all the identity thieves and hackers that are running loose. And so we understand that we need to put our treasures in a safe place. But where is a safe place, really, here on this earth? If we're talking about earthly treasures, where we can put our treasures that are safe is in heaven. Jesus says, no one can touch them there. So don't be foolish. Put your treasures where they will be safe. The true treasures, in other words. Not the outer, the visible, but the inward, the invisible treasures. Those are the ones that we need to be storing up. Secondly, he talks about our focus in life. And whereas he was talking about our possessions, now he's talking about who we are in this part. And drawing the conclusion that if the eye is clear, or if the eye is bad, then what will the result be? Then if the eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if the eye is bad, the whole body will be full of darkness. So there is a contrast that is, Jesus is laying down a contrast and saying, we have to make a choice. We cannot choose both of these courses of action in life. That he starts out by saying it's either or. He says in verse 19, do not lay up treasures on earth. And in verse 24, he ends this same discussion, you cannot serve God and mammon. So he makes that very crystal clear that this is not an either or proposition. This is you choose one or you choose the other. It's that simple. Are you going to have your treasures on earth? Then you're not going to have them in heaven. But if you have them on in heaven, you have to lay them aside here on earth. You have to have a clear focus on who you are. If you are a child of God, then your ambitions and your priorities are to reflect that. It's not just how you worship on the first day of the week. It's not just the religious devotion that you have when you come together in a meeting like this. It really comes down to how do you live your life? What are your values that you are building your life upon? And what are the things that you worry about? Because he goes on into talking about that in the verses, in the context following this. So we choose. We choose the foolish choice, which is the wrong, or we make the wise choice, which is the right choice, the eternal. Each one of us decides which it is in our own lives. But we can't choose both. That's the point that Jesus is making. Don't kid yourself. Don't fool yourself. That I can have both. I can have the world and I can have the eternal treasures also. It's got to be one or the other. Or we will lose out on the true treasures. Erosion happens gradually in people's lives. Just like it does over here by Washaway Beach here in Washington. Where the water erodes the cliff lines and eventually the houses fall into the ocean. And it happens in people's lives also that same way, that we don't think that a gradual, you know, things are okay in my life. And we sometimes see how people start out with such a clear-minded focus of living the Christian life. Are so excited to be a Christian. They come up out of the waters of baptism. They are on fire for the Lord. But there's an erosion process that begins to eat away at their priorities. And some examples of this in the Bible where people begin to choose the lesser loyalty in life. King Solomon, good example of that, who started out his life by asking for wisdom from God. And God granted him great wisdom that he is famous for, writing the Proverbs and writing all of those things. But in 1 Kings chapter 11, what does the Bible tell us about King Solomon? That in the many wives that he chose, they turned his heart away from God. At a certain time in his life, there was an erosion that took place. There was Elisha's servant, was named Gehazi. And when Elisha came to the home of Naaman, and he told Naaman to go and wash in the River Jordan seven times, and Naaman went, and Naaman first was not going to go, and it was even his servant who pointed this out, that my master, you know, if it was some other thing, you would do it. And so he went and washed in the River Jordan. But he came back, and the prophet wanted to give them a gift. He wanted to give the prophet a gift, and the prophet declined. And Gehazi wanted that, but he lied about it. So that was a similar process, a sad ending, that he received the leprosy that his master had before that was given to Gehazi. And in the New Testament, there was the case of Demas, who had forsaken the Apostle Paul, forsaken the Lord, having loved this present world. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 10. So it can happen to any of us where if we do not keep that clear focus clearly in our mind and in our heart, that our focus is on heaven, our focus is on the treasures that are laid up invisibly. And as the writer of Proverbs reminded so many times, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. So Jesus here is talking about the eye, the lamp of the body. And he starts by saying there in verse 22 that if therefore your eye is good. Now, the word that he uses there, if your eye is good, the Greek word means to be single, to be whole, to be sound, to be fulfilling the office. So your eye being able to see clearly of what is true and what is of eternal value. In other words, we are able to see that the only treasure that can really bring satisfaction and eternal reward is the treasure in heaven. Now, if we have that vision, he is saying your whole body will be full of light, meaning a bright character, full of light, and well lit. Your life is illuminated when we have a focus on eternal things. We see that oftentimes a person, their life is so joyful, so happy, and so peaceful that they see clearly the things that matter. Like the eunuch, the Ethiopian eunuch in Acts chapter 8, he went on his way rejoicing when he had been baptized into the Lord. His life was changed by the gospel, and so his life is lit up. He is happy. He is joyful. He has a purpose of his life, and his heart is pure in the devotion that he has toward God. But Jesus says, if your eye is bad, then your whole body will be full of darkness. Now, this word means to be evil, to be diseased, to be defective, to be opaque. That your eye will cause your body to be the same. when we have our vision is not upon eternal things, but is upon those things here of the earth, your body will be full of darkness. And it is going to affect everything in life, what your vision. So that's who you are. You have your possessions, but you have your vision. And your vision is upon those things that matter most. And you're making the wise choice. You see it clearly which way is to go. Your life is full of light. But if not, then it can be full of darkness. Now there are some applications that we can make from this in our lives today. Because the importance of our vision affects our daily life in many areas of life. The immediate application here is to the treasures that Jesus is speaking about. Do we have our treasures on earth or our treasures in heaven? And are we serving two masters or are we serving one? You cannot serve God and mammon. Mammon was an Aramaic word for money, and it was a Roman god that was a god of wealth that was being used, and it meant that money has that quality. Now money in itself is not, but it is the making that the treasure of your life that is the problem. As Jesus said in Luke chapter 12 and verse 15 when speaking with his disciples, and he said, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." And he told the parable in Luke chapter 16 about the unjust steward, and he made a point there in verse 9. He said, "And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by the unrighteous mammon, that when they fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home." So when the treasures that we have, make friends in heaven with the unrighteous mammon. Use the treasure that God has entrusted to us, which God entrusts to us the blessings of our jobs, our income, our homes, the material blessings that we have. We're richly blessed, all of us. God has entrusted these to us. And we, in turn, are to make friends of heaven, that when these fail, when these things of earth fail, they may receive you into the everlasting habitation. So we like Jesus is saying, lay up for yourself treasures in heaven where moth and rust does not consume and thieves do not break through and steal. In 1 Timothy 6 and verse 9 and 10, he said that the love of riches, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. So the immediate application is to that. And having an evil eye, sometimes used in the Bible in terms of greed or having the desire that for riches of this earth, that we grasp to those and we do not share. Because when a person's heart is upon those evil things, you can see that in his... is he a generous person or not? Or is he stingy in terms of just helping other people or sharing with others? It says in Proverbs 23 and verse 6, "Do not eat the bread of a miser, nor desire his delicacies, for as he thinks in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you." In other words, you come over to the house of a miser, and he says, well, make yourself at home, you know, eat anything that is here. But in reality, he's keeping an eye on, how many of those cookies did you have? He doesn't really have that generosity in his heart. He's watching you every moment. In the 28th chapter of Proverbs, in verse 22, he says a similar statement, "A man with an evil eye hastens after riches." That word miser that is used in chapter 23, the footnote says he has an evil eye. And in 28:22, "A man with an evil eye hastens after riches and does not consider that poverty will come upon him." In the book of Deuteronomy, in the 15th chapter, it talks about how that when there are people who come among you who are needy, that you are to, you know, reach down and share with them. You're to be generous and benevolent with the blessings that God gives us. He said, "Beware lest there be a wicked thought in your heart, saying, the year of release is at hand, and your eye be evil against your poor brother, and you give him nothing, and he cry out to the Lord against you, and it become sin among you." So having an evil eye, it affects how you act towards people. In other words, your heart and your eye being upon the things of earthly treasures, you are not going to be a generous person. But when your eye is upon God and you understand God is the source of our blessings, He takes care of us, He will always take care of us, and this is, He's entrusting these things, we are stewards of those blessings of God, then we can be generous and share with others because our heart is upon God and we understand those things that God blesses us with. But there are some additional applications and contrasts that we could also think about in terms of having an evil eye or a clear eye. Do we accept only Christ's doctrine and teaching, or are we drawn to the teachings of men? Because in Matthew chapter 15, Jesus discussed the issue with the Pharisees and their teachings, which were of men. And he reminded his disciples to be careful not to listen to those things which come from men. He said, "You hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, these people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men." So the doctrines of men, or are we satisfied only to seek out those teachings that come from Christ in His Word? As He said in Colossians, the second chapter in verse 8, "Beware, lest anyone cheat you through philosophy and empty deceit, according to the tradition of men, according to the basic principles of the world, and not according to Christ." Those doctrines of men and those teachings of men ultimately come from the fleshly desires of men. And they will cheat us. They will take us away from God. Therefore, we must be satisfied that in Christ are the treasures of wisdom. Hear His Word and His Word only. The same is true for His church. Because in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 18, Jesus said that upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. And in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 4, He said there is one body, and there is one Spirit, and there is one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, and one baptism. So we must be clear in our commitment to the things of Christ and to seek out and understand that His church is unique. That the church that Jesus established is still here on this earth and will not fail. And that we need to have the faith to be a part of His church. And not to seek the things of the churches of men that have come about through the doctrines of men. And then true worship or vain worship. Jesus said that God is spirit, and they that worship Him must worship in spirit and truth. And once again, He said, in vain they worship Me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. If we do not have biblical authority and precedent of what we do in our worship and how we worship God and how we offer up our worship to Him, then it will be in vain. If we are following after the doctrines and teachings of men in our worship. But also in our lives, whether we are transformed or conformed to this world, as Paul speaks in Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. The world tries to shape us into its mold constantly, to conform. Conform, conform, conform. That is the message of the world. God seeks to transform us from within by the renewing of our mind as we study His Word and as we are transformed and changed internally to new people that think differently than the world around about us. And we have the faith and the confidence in God that His ways are true, that His treasures are the only treasures of value to live our lives for. Then we choose those choices. We have a clear eye, and our life is full of light. It's often said that the eye is the window of the soul, and that as you look into a person's eyes, you see a lot about that person. You are able to see if that person has love and compassion and kindness, truthfulness, honesty, integrity. You see those qualities. On the other hand, sometimes you see things like pride and jealousy and envy and maliciousness and guilt in the eye of the person. It's a window to the soul. That if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But when you look into an eye that there is problems in that person's life, you see that in their eye. I think Jesus is making a spiritual application of this, maybe not just speaking about the physical aspects, but I think it's interesting that when you look into the eye and a person makes eye contact with you, or if they avoid making eye contact, there is, a message that you are able to see. That's a troubled person. There's something going on in that person's life. They will not look you in the eye. And Jesus is telling us that if we have our eyesight clear, then our whole body is full of light, and we have hope, and we know that God is our God. And we don't fear the things. We don't worry about the things of this life. It comes out in the way you spend your money. He goes on to talk about your clothing. You know, are we just, all we can think about is the clothing and how we can spend our money on the clothing? Or is our treasure really upon God? Because he says, look at the flowers and you know, the birds of the heaven. They're not worried about these things. They're singing, they're cheerful, they're happy. God clothes the flowers of the field, that today they come and they are gone tomorrow. They're beautiful things that God clothes them with. Don't worry about the clothing that we have. Those things are not that important. So having the proper vision, Jesus said, Paul in Colossians chapter 3, if then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. Where are your eyes today? Are they full of light? Are they full of hope? Or has erosion happened? Darkness is coming in, whether you realize it or not. Are you deceiving yourself, thinking that you can have a little bit of the world to come and you can still have the other hand on this earth? Or are you willing to release those things and be single-minded focus upon the things that matter, to lay up yourselves treasures in heaven? For where your heart is, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. If you're subject to the invitation this morning, we're going to stand and sing the song of invitation. And we hope that you'll respond to it, come forth and commit your life to Jesus Christ and surrender to Him in baptism. Begin to live that life that He alone can give us. Will you come as we stand together and sing the invitation song?
389. Would you live for Jesus and be always pure and good?
Would you walk with Him within the narrow